Working remotely, where you are shouldn't dictate what you do. Work from the road by turning your vehicle into a reliable high-speed data Wi-Fi hotspot with AT&T in-car Wi-Fi. On the network that covers more roads than any other carrier, take your work on the road and AT&T will be there to keep you connected. Connect up to 10 devices and stream conference calls, finish up that presentation, or answer last-minute emails. Why wait? Go to att.com/in-car Wi-Fi today for free trial eligibility. Based on independent third-party data, number of devices varies by manufacturer. Always pay careful attention to the road and don't drive distracted. Wi-Fi hotspot intended for passenger use only when vehicle is in operation. Compatible device and vehicle required.
Now your ideas don't have to wait. Now they have everything they need to come to life. Dell Technologies and Intel are creating technology that loves ideas. Loves expanding your business and evolving your passions. They push what technology can do so great ideas can happen right now. Find out how to bring your ideas to life at Dell.com. Welcome to now.
When you think about the future, what kind of technology do you envision? Whatever the future holds, artificial intelligence will undoubtedly be at the heart of it all. Join Graham Class as he hosts Season 2 of Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast, and hear from the minds transforming healthcare, retail, entertainment, personal computing, and more with the help of AI. Tune in every other Tuesday and explore the latest technology that's changing our world today and creating a more accessible tomorrow. Listen to Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
What's up, this your boy Lil Duval, and check out my podcast, Conversations with Unc, on the Black Effect Podcast Network. Each and every Tuesday, Conversations with Unc podcast feature casual and in-depth talk about ebbs and flows of life and the pursuit of happiness. Unlike my work on stage, I tap into a more serious and sensitive side to give life advice and simply offer words of encouragement, yet remind folks to never forget to laugh. Every Tuesday, listen to Conversations with Unc, hosted by Lil Duval on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Presented by AT&T. Connecting changes everything.
Brought to you by the reinvented 2012 Camry. It's ready. Are you?
Get in touch with technology with Tech Stuff from HowStuffWorks.com.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to Tech Stuff. My name is Chris Paulette, and I am an editor at HowStuffWorks.com. Sitting across from me, as always, is senior writer Jonathan Strickland.
Oh, the weather outside is frightful, but the fire is so delightful. So since we've no place to go, well, you know.
Somehow he never tells me what the quote is before we start. And I had a feeling, I actually predicted this one in my head. But
that there was going to be that particular song?
Yeah.
Well done. Well, before we talk about what our topic is, I have a Jeopardy challenge for you.
Okay.
All right. You ready now? Here is your answer. This popular, massively multiplayer online role-playing game was featured in a question on Jeopardy's College Week in 2005.
What is World of Warcraft?
You didn't buzz in, so I'm sorry.
I knew it.
We're taking all of your money, and we're going to break your legs.
This is how he plays the predictions game, too.
That is, yes, I will change the rules so that I win no matter what. No, yes. That is correct. We are going to talk today not about World of Warcraft specifically, although that'll definitely be a large part of the conversation, but about Blizzard. Blizzard Entertainment, or Activision Blizzard, the company behind such big hits as World of Warcraft, Warcraft, StarCraft, and Diablo.
Actually, I thought we were going to talk about Silicon and Synapse.
That is, in fact, where we start. Our story officially begins at UCLA in around 1990.
Yeah, that's the University of California at Los Angeles.
Thank you.
For those of you not in the know.
So they were at UCLA. And UCLA. At UCLA, there was a student, a computer science student named Alan Adam, who met a fellow. He actually, according to him, his official story about how he met Mike Morheim was that Alan was sitting in the computer lab and was typing away, tappy, 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 and then decided that he needed to get up and get himself a hot beverage and maybe a quick trip to the gents. So he locks himself out of his computer and leaves. And he comes back. He turns on his computer again, gets it ready, and types in his password, and it launches. Meanwhile, Mike Morheim says,
Hey there, big guy. I have a question for you. How did you make it so that your computer unlocked automatically while you were away? I had to lock it again for you. And then in the process of their conversation, they find out the most unlikely of coincidences that Adam and Mike both were using the same password for their computers.
Really?
That is the way Alan tells the story. Mike tells a different story. Mike's story is that he saw this fellow who was in a couple of his computer science classes, and this is their senior year at UCLA, and he sees this guy and he thinks, this fellow looks like he's from Israel and he looks really smart. So he walks up to him and says, what part of Israel are you from? And Alan says, I'm from Egypt. Those are the two stories that they tell. Yeah, there's an official like Blizzard retrospective video, which is actually pretty cool. I really recommend you watch it if you're into like just want to know more about the history of the company. The reason why that video was posted was because this year, 2011, when we're recording this podcast, is the 20th anniversary of the founding of the company. Because in 1991, once Alan graduated, he decided he wanted to make video games. Actually, he knew he wanted to make video games even before he had graduated college. And so he wanted to create a company. And he called upon Mike Morheim to join him. And Mike was working at Western Digital at the time. Mm-hmm. And he left the company because Mike had graduated about 3 months before Alan did. But he left Western Digital to come and work with Alan at this new company, which probably upset Mike's family a bit, because there you were working for an established company with an actual like revenue generating plan and everything.
Revenue from avenue.
And then striking out to form this games company. It was probably a nerve wracking experience. He also called upon a second friend. Alan had met another person in the computer science department named Frank Pierce.
Yes.
And he called upon Frank Pierce as well and said, hey, I'm starting up this video game company. Would you like to join me? Now, Frank had also gone to UCLA and did not know Mike. So Frank and Mike didn't know each other. The connecting element here is Alan.
Yes.
But Frank decides to come over, and he actually left another established company called Rockwell.
Yes.
He left Rockwell to go and join this new company, which, as Chris has revealed, was called Silicon and Synapse.
Wow, what a catchy name.
Yeah, the reasons behind that name, well, first of all, silicon, of course, is the basis for a lot of our electronics. That's the silicon chip. It's the whole foundation for the modern transistor. That's where the whole silicon part came from. Synapse, of course, meaning that the connections in your brain, the stuff that fires off so that you mm-hmm. can complete thought. So to them, they thought this is a great idea. But according to their video, other people just didn't get it.
Mm-hmm.
First of all, they thought that silicon was the material that went into breast augmentation surgery.
That would be silicone.
That would be silicone. But other people were like, why are you calling your company after boobies? And they said, we're not calling our company after boobies. We are calling our company. But, you tell that story. And then the other response they get is, what's a synapse?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Now, I kind of like the name Silicon and Synapse because, for one thing, it reminds me of other companies or other products that have blank and blank. For example, Dungeons and Dragons. And these guys clearly had at least some love for the old Dungeons and Dragons role-playing system, because a lot of the stuff they worked on had that kind of flair to it. So the first few years, they're working under the title of Silicon and Synapse. The company name is Silicon and Synapse. And they had done work previously in their college years with companies like Interplay. Do you know what kind of games Interplay made off the top of your head?
Well, I do remember some Interplay titles.
Yeah.
But I don't remember any of them off the top of my head.
Some big names include like Baldur's Gate and Descent, and the original Fallout games were Interplay games.
Okay.
Yeah. And then they also had done some work for Datasoft, which is another game company. They did things like Zaxxon and Pole Position and Time and Magic.
So The following statement is a joke. So then all of a sudden, Silicon and Synapse made World of Warcraft and lots of money, right?
No. The first thing they started to do is they started working on ports from certain platforms into other platforms. So, right.
So when a game is made for a particular platform, say the PC or Windows, let's say,
yeah,
and you wanted to write a version of it for the Macintosh, you would port the game over, the original code over, to work on a different type of computer, is what you're saying.
Which could take quite a bit of time, because, as we know, these different operating systems don't necessarily support the same kind of models. So you would have to go in and you've built all the resources in your code, but now you've got to repurpose it for different types of code.
Mm-hmm.
And they started porting Amiga and Mac titles, strangely enough.
Mm-hmm.
One of their first ports was for a game that I loved back in the early 90s called Battle Chess.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. So Battle Chess, in case you have never seen it, was a game of chess. It was, you know, played out on a chessboard, but the figures that you're moving, the chess pieces you're moving around, are actually 3D modeled, or, well, I guess they were originally 2D rendered, cartoonish figures.
Mm-hmm.
So your pawns look like little foot soldiers. The queen is this slinky, deadly woman who dispatches her enemies in creative ways. And there were different animations when you would take a piece. So let's say, you know, pawn takes pawn. It would play out as a little battle on your screen for that square. Now, the way Battle Chess worked was that you would, if you made the move to take a square, that was the piece that was going to win every time. It wasn't mm-hmm. like it had inserted some sort of element of chance where you would try and take a square and your piece would end up getting defeated. That didn't happen. But the animations were very cute. And so that was one of the first ports they began to work on. They also, and they ported that over for Windows and the Commodore 64, actually,
mm-hmm.
even that late in the game, so to speak. And then the first, do you know what the first game they developed was?
The first game they developed by themselves?
Yeah. It wasn't a port. It was a game that they created from the ground up. It was called RPM Racing.
Ah, okay. All right. I thought you were going to mention Death and Return of Superman before you got to that point.
Oh, no. I don't know this. Why don't you talk about that?
Well, I don't know a ton of, a ton of information about that specific, game, but, one of the articles I used as a reference mentioned Battle Chess 2 and the Death and Return of Superman, which was released in 1994, as an example of a port that they had done.
Oh, yeah.
And they were sort of cruising along before they got to the point where they were developing their own titles.
Well, they did develop a couple of titles before that, but it was for the SNES, mm-hmm. Super Nintendo Entertainment System, or the Super Famicom, if you prefer. Because the first one they did with that was in 92 for RPM Racing, and then in 93 they released one called Rock and Roll Racing, which was one of the first games for the Nintendo to feature, the Super Nintendo to feature rock and roll music. But that was like, again, that was for the Super NES. That wasn't a PC game or Mac game, whatever. It's not a computer game. It was a console game. So they've done a few console games, just a few. They're more known for, at least today, they're more known for their computer titles rather than their console titles. But this was kind of where they started to develop their art style. And they hired a few artists and had some great stories in that video I was talking about the weird interview process. And they were playing it really fast and loose because these were all guys who were fresh out of college and had never really done this before. So they had a kind of relaxed way of going about business.
Mm-hmm.
But it ended up really working for them. And the titles that they developed ended up winning awards for RPM Racing, I think, or maybe it was Rock and Roll Racing, won the title of the best racing game of the year that came out. And so they were doing well, but they still hadn't moved on to doing computer games. They also developed a game for the Super Nintendo Entertainment System called The Lost Vikings.
Mm, yes.
Which ended up being very popular. It was originally The original idea was that it was going to be kind of like Lemmings.
Mm-hmm.
And if you're not familiar with the game Lemmings, in Lemmings, your task is to guide a group of little lemmings from one side of a screen to another side of the screen. And you assign specific tasks to particular lemmings to try and create a pathway for the lemmings to get there safely. And the lemmings will just walk in a direction until they encounter an obstacle or they die.
And of course, some of them are doomed in order to make the rest of the herd
survive. Yeah, you might have to explode one on purpose.
Oh no.
So yeah, now Blizzard did not make Lemmings, but they thought that the Lemmings game was really interesting. And so originally the Lost Vikings was going to be a game where you would have, you know, around 100 different kinds of Vikings that could do different tasks. But through the development process, they decided to narrow that down. And then they got down to 5 Vikings. And then by the time they actually got to the point where they were putting the game together, they decided on 3 Vikings. And using these 3 Vikings, you would go through a series of puzzles. So it ultimately was a puzzle game. Mm-hmm. But it, again, was very popular. It won an award for the best puzzle game that year. And then in 93, Silicon Synapse throws in the booby towel and decides to rename their company Chaos Studios.
Yes.
Which lasted for a few months, and then in 1994, they changed their name again to Blizzard Entertainment.
Well, all this stuff, while it's not as glamorous as some of the stuff they've done in the last, say, 15 years, over those first 3 or 4 years, they really were making a name for themselves, and no pun intended with the name changes. Yeah,
multiple names for themselves.
Because a company named Davidson & Associates acquired the company in 1994 also for $10 million.
Yeah.
So, you know, just even as a fledgling company, Chaos Studios was becoming known for its work, and it was obvious that these guys knew what they were doing.
Yeah, and actually that ended up getting really complicated too, because so Blizzard gets purchased by Davidson & Associates. Davidson & Associates gets purchased by a company called CUC International. CUC International then goes on to merge with a company called HFS Corporation, and the new parent company is called Cendent, C-E-N-D-E-N-T.
Actually, I have D-A-N-T.
Oh, do you?
Yeah.
Oh, I have D-E-N-T. Interesting. Anyway. But anyway, it's that's the company that also owns Sierra Online. Mm-hmm. So now you've got Sierra Online and Blizzard Entertainment are kind of mashed together as a division within this parent company called Cendent. And we'll get back to Cendent in a little bit, but we're still in 1994 right now, and that's also when demos begin to circulate in that summer for a new game called Warcraft, Orcs versus Humans.
Yes.
This is the game that really puts Blizzard on the map. I mean, Blizzard had already won awards for its Super Nintendo Entertainment System games, but these are the games that make it a name in PC gaming and Mac gaming eventually.
Yes, yes. As a matter of fact, well, of course, Orcs really sort of come from
Tolkien.
The Lord of the Rings.
Yeah.
And really, they're sort of borrowing that idea.
Yeah.
Now, this actually, in a way, goes along with the story of Nintendo, not directly. But one of the things that they were doing with this title was to basically leaven the computer game with story.
Yeah.
The story of the war between the orcs and the humans isn't just a computer game. It's also got a backstory.
Yeah.
About how the orcs are being used, by another power. And that will eventually develop later in other titles. But, they had a new sort of game on their hands with the real-time strategy game.
Yeah.
And
let's explain what a real-time strategy game is, just in case some of our listeners don't know. So, typically, a real-time strategy game plays out in real time, so it's not turn-based. So you don't make a move, then wait in order to make another move. Everything's going on around the same time.
Yeah, while you're preparing your armies to attack, your opponent is preparing his or her armies to attack at the same time.
Right. So unlike games like Risk or Civilization, where it is turn-based, it's all going on simultaneously. Then the way you create your armies is you build resource gathering units. You build special buildings that allow you to create military units. And so you have to build buildings with various types of characters that you have. So you might have some characters that are not warriors.
Right.
They're like farmers or woodcutters or whatever. They go out. They gather the resources you need to build the other stuff you need.
And the then
you
small might, folk.
Right. And then you might have to build something like a barracks, which will allow you to produce troops. Mm-hmm. And then there are certain specialized units that you can only produce if you build other buildings as well. So it becomes a balancing act of creating military units and also creating the resources you need to produce the units you need. And, you know, all of this is coming from the same raw materials. So the strategy is multifaceted. You have the production strategy, like how much effort do you put toward gathering resources? How much do you put toward producing basic units? How much do you put toward enhancing the buildings you already have? And then also, how do you explore and defeat your opponent? Now, in the original Warcraft game, you pretty much could see everything on the map. Another development comes up a little bit later that changes that. Mm-hmm. Also, it was top down. So you're looking, it's as if you were directly overhead of the map in the original Warcraft game. It was a top down view.
Mm-hmm.
And it actually, there was a game that came out before Warcraft.
You're thinking probably of Westwood Studios' Dune 2.
Dune 2 was another real time strategy game that follows the same general philosophy as Warcraft, has a totally different feel to it than Warcraft.
Mm-hmm.
But it became like a kind of a battle between Blizzard and Westwood to see who was going to win out. But the art style of Warcraft, the backstory to Warcraft, the whimsy really of Warcraft all helped to really push that game ahead.
I loved one of the things that I loved about that game and the games like it that followed is just, and it's not even part of the game. It's continuing to click on people after you've, because when you want to have a unit do something, say you want to, one of your units to go chop wood so that you have wood for your buildings.
Right.
You click on it and you say, you know, okay, I want you. And then you click on the trees to go over here and cut down wood for lumber. And, you know, when the, Blizzard had the idea to basically give you a verbal acknowledgement.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. My lord. Mm-hmm. And then but the thing is, somebody said, you know what? You need to keep clicking on the guy. So I said, all right. And I did. And as you continue to click on that one unit, they become increasingly annoyed with you.
Yeah. What is it? What do you want?
And as far as I know, that continues. I don't have StarCraft 2, but even in the StarCraft game, they would do that. It's one of those things that I just love about it because it goes along with the game. Of course, you can waste time while the other guy is building up his army, but I thought it was a kick to do that.
So we're still in 1994 right now. At this point, Blizzard has about 25 employees. They've only been in business for 3 years. They've got 25 employees. They created a small booth at CES that year, and that's where they kind of showed off the idea of Warcraft and got a lot of attention there. And so it created a lot of buzz. And then, of course, later in the year, Warcraft came out. It was a big hit. And then near the end of 1995, so just a year later, they released Warcraft 2 Tides of Darkness. And that's where they introduced the idea of a fog of war.
Mm-hmm.
Now, if you're not a gamer and you don't really know these terms, what fog of war means is that part of the map is intentionally obscured from your view as a player. And you only can uncover that part of the map, pardon me, once you start sending units in to explore it.
Yeah, basically, I think of that as sort of a role-playing game addition, because if you think about your players as characters and yourself as a character in the game, as the, if you will, the general behind your troops, you haven't been there yet. Your troops haven't been in this part of the forest yet, so they don't know what's there.
Right, and because you don't have any eyes there, it's not like you can, you know, if you were on the ground, you would not be able to see that far. Like, so the idea is that the fog of war limits what you can see until you start sending units in to explore. So that gave the option of creating things like scouting units, things like that. Changes the strategy a lot. You couldn't just immediately glance at the map, see what your enemy was up to, and then adjust. You had to anticipate what your enemy might do and try and head them off. And also, Warcraft had already introduced this, the idea of being able to play against human opponents, not just the computer opponents, but human opponents, either over a modem or over a local area network.
Mm-hmm.
That, I can't stress enough how important that was to the success of Warcraft, because playing against the computer is fun.
Yeah.
Playing against your friends is a blast, right? I mean, there's the whole element of smack talk. There's bragging rights. There are the great stories that you tell where, you know, it looked like all the way up until the last half hour of that game, it looked like you were going to lose, but you somehow turned it around just because this crazy tactic that had just a sliver of a chance to work actually paid off. That kind of stuff is really invaluable for a game. I mean, it really pushed it into a phenomenon, and Warcraft 2 continued that. And also, players were taking it upon themselves to find creative ways to create matches against each other online. This predates Blizzard's own online service. So what they were using was a service called Kali, K-A-L-I, and they were creating matches over that. But that sort of served, you know, Blizzard took notice of that, and that sort of served as a model for them, and they began to develop their own online service, which would become known as Battle.net, Battle.net, if you prefer.
Just an interesting note, we were talking about the serendipitous nature of the founders of Blizzard meeting one another. Actually, there's something else that's about to come up that has its roots back at a CES when the company was developing titles for the SNES.
Uh-huh.
They had been asked by a company called Sunsoft to develop a DC Comics fighting game for the SNES. And they had a copy of it to show off at CES. Well, as it turns out, a company called Condor Software, had been asked to do the same thing for the Sega Genesis. And the two companies didn't know one another, but they, the founders of the companies met at CES, and they basically stayed in contact with one another. In fact, from what I understand, Dave Brevik of Condor was given an opportunity to beta test Warcraft, the early version of Warcraft, because he liked what he saw and thought it was really cool.
So this game company called Condor.
Yes.
Were they developing a game that would become a worldwide phenomenon?
They might have been.
And did Blizzard get into the opportunity to actually acquire said company Condor?
Well, as it turns out, the Warcraft games were a hit.
Yes, a massive hit.
And they brought a lot of money into, if you'll pardon my joke, Blizzard's war chest.
Ah, nice.
I didn't say battle chest.
No,
actually, I picked up my first. Just as an aside, I picked up my first Warcraft. I got the battle chest with Warcraft 2 and the expansion.
I
played the living daylights out of those three.
It's a great game. Great series of games.
But anyhow, yes, they with that money, they contacted Condor and said, "Hey, you know, we're friends. Why don't we
work together?
Work together."
Yeah, and so yeah, Blizzard acquired Condor, and
they became Blizzard North.
Right, they renamed it Blizzard North. It was located in San Mateo, California, and Condor was working on a game that would become insanely popular, so much so that that right now, as we record this podcast, there are people begging to get into the beta of the most current version of that game.
Yes.
And that game was a dungeon crawler and a mouse killer.
Yes. As a matter of fact, it from what I understand, people credit this game with launching the dungeon crawler.
Yeah. And also launching Battle.net. It is, of course, Diablo, a game where you created fantasy-inspired character, and you would have various weapons. You would go into dungeons, and you would click on things to kill them. And really, when you get down to the gameplay, it was pretty simple.
Yeah.
You know, it's a lot of clicking. But it was addictive because for lots of reasons. The game design was fantastic. The art was great. The leveling system was cool. The loot system was very satisfying as a gamer. So everything in this game, considering how simple it was done correctly, just to the point where people just fell in love with it. And it launched with the Battle.net service, which was a free online service where people could go and make matches to play online together. And it made money through online advertising, through web advertising. Actually made quite a bit of money because it was incredibly popular. Now, around 1997... a couple different things are happening. For one, Blizzard starts to develop a game that would be, you know, actually they were supposed to release the game in 97 called Warcraft Adventures.
Mm-hmm.
Now, this was going to be a game that was going to be an adventure-based game. So adventure games, when we talk about that, those are games like the Monkey Island series, or the old King's Quest series, or Space Quest. These are games where you solve puzzles, you wander around, you interact with other characters. Generally, you have to collect a lot of items and then combine stuff in your inventory in order to achieve certain tasks, to complete certain tasks. And it was fairly popular for a while. So Blizzard thought, well, why don't we create a Warcraft adventure kind of in the model of the old Monkey Island games and flesh out this mythology we've created about the orcs? And this will give you more of a backstory about what the orcs are and why they are the way they are. And they started developing it. But here's the thing about Blizzard. They take game development very seriously.
Mm-hmm.
And if a game is not ready for release, they will not release it. So they don't release games prematurely. They don't want to have, they don't want to introduce a buggy, bad game into the market because it's a black eye for the company.
Yeah, they have they're famous actually for their release date when it's ready.
Yeah. So they learned that lesson the hard way because they had announced that this game was going to launch in 1997 and it didn't. And as there were delays in the development process, the adventure model changed. For one thing, companies started to develop 3D adventure games. So, one of the Monkey Island games, one of the later Monkey Island games was rendered as a 3D style game so that the characters were no longer this kind of flat animated look.
Mm-hmm.
Grim Fandango is another example. So, at that point, the Warcraft Adventures was starting to look dated because it was doing the old 2D design. And because of that and other reasons, Blizzard decided ultimately to kill the product and it would never reach store shelves.
Won't be the last time they do that.
No. And that same year in 97, that's when you had the scandal, at Cendant, the parent company that owned Blizzard. So here's the scandal. Apparently, the company had sort of fibbed about its income.
Sort of.
And inflated it by about a third because analysts had expected the company to do incredibly well. And so in order for it to look like the company had met those expectations, they cooked the books over at Cendant.
Mm.
And in the wake of the scandal, they ended up selling off Sierra Online, which included Blizzard Entertainment. And they sold it to a French company called Havas. And then that company then was bought by another company called Vivendi.
Ah, the plumbers.
Yeah. So
yet another company that's in video games now that was in something completely different a century ago.
Yeah, we'll get back to their adventure in a few years. So yeah, again, what was remarkable though is through all this corporate change where they're being acquired and merged and sold off and reacquired and all that kind of stuff, while all this is happening, Blizzard remained remarkably cohesive.
Yeah.
At this point, the three founders are all still there. And they were still working on games. Now, that same year in 97, they were developing a new real-time strategy game and they showed it off at the second ever E3 conference.
Mm-hmm.
And this was an isometric view science fiction real-time strategy game called StarCraft.
Yes.
Isometric view meaning that it's instead of it being a direct top-down view, you're viewing it at an angle. Kind of like imagine you're hovering over the landscape and you're looking down and ahead of you. That's kind of what we're talking about here,
mm-hmm.
an isometric view. And the StarCraft game featured three races.
Yes.
The Protoss, the Terran, and the Zerg.
Zerg Rush.
And it's kind of interesting because unlike other games, in Warcraft, in Orcs versus Humans, you had Orc units and you had human units, but they were essentially analogs to each other.
Yeah, you had the same essential buildings. You had to mine gold. You had a barracks where you produced your warriors.
Yeah.
You know, they used the same buildings, but they looked different and spoke differently.
Yeah, different art style, but they behaved very much the same way. So, yeah.
But not the case with StarCraft.
Yeah, StarCraft, each race had its own unique units, its own unique strategies. So a strategy that would work for one race would not work for another one. You'd have to develop a totally different race depending upon – or a totally different strategy rather depending upon what race you were playing. And they also had some other cool features. Like the game would feature your mission objectives might change in the course of a mission, which meant that you had to be flexible. You couldn't commit all of your resources to doing a specific task, because if that task changed halfway through, then you might be stuck. So it meant that you had to be really quick on your feet when you were playing this. And in fact, there are professional gamers who specialize in StarCraft to this day.
Yes. As a matter of fact, South Korea has a huge StarCraft following.
Yeah.
There are StarCraft TV shows.
Yeah. And we've talked about that a little bit when we talked about our professional gamer podcast.
StarCraft, it was a huge – actually, this game helped launch that movement.
Yeah. They're like professional athletes in some countries. And they and when you, if you ever watch a truly adept player, it is it's incomprehensible to me. I mean, they're executing so many commands per second that – I can't, like, I'm thinking, like, where's my little guy who says hello when I click on him? And meanwhile, they've wiped out half my units. And I'm like, what happened?
By the time you find him, he'll be the only guy left.
Yeah. Yeah. He's like, I'm lonely. So StarCraft became a worldwide phenomenon.
Huge.
And it was a big hit when it launched. It wasn't like a slow burn. It took off pretty quickly, although its popularity was, grew exponentially once it went overseas. So in 99, Blizzard announced Warcraft 3. Now, originally, Warcraft 3 was supposed to be a new type of game. It was supposed to be a role-playing strategy game, not a real-time strategy game. And the idea, again, because Blizzard was very much interested in the storytelling aspect of video games and conveying a kind of a tale to tell, and that the gamer is part of that story and helps generate that story.
Mm-hmm.
They thought that this was going to be a really immersive game that would connect the player to the game in a way that had not been done in previous Warcraft games. So they announced it in 99. Unfortunately, really, by the time it came out, I mean, although Warcraft 3 is an amazing game, it was not the same sort of game that they had talked about back in 99 when it finally debuted. Because again, you know, they found what worked, what didn't work, and they were not going to release a game that was just okay. They wanted it to be the best that it could be based on their resources and their knowledge.
Yeah, now Warcraft 3, if you've played the first two Warcraft games, and StarCraft for that matter, StarCraft 1, will seem somewhat familiar and somewhat unfamiliar, because where you could actually play through a long game where you had many, many scenarios, you were also required in Warcraft 3 to take a turn with each of the races. Warcraft 3 took the StarCraft model where each of the races has a little bit of a different ability.
Yeah.
The things that work for Night Elves won't necessarily work for, you know, Undead.
And they introduced the hero classes as well, so that mm-hmm. changed things a bit. Hero units, rather.
Yeah, and there was a story that goes through the game. You start off with the human units, and you're working there with a prince who's your hero, leading your units through battle. And, well, I won't have a story spoiler, but the story continues as you go through the other races. And I think it's more of a, at least in my opinion, it's more of a battle net type game.
Yeah.
Where you're you can play it just yourself, but the real value in that game is to play it online or with other people. Because it was really designed to be an expansive online real-time strategy game, as opposed to something that you spend hours trying to solve yourself.
So between when they announced Warcraft 3 and when Warcraft 3 actually debuts, which is about 3 years, in that 3-year period, they're not just trying to create Warcraft 3 and switching things around. They also, in 2000, released Diablo 2,
mm-hmm.
which was, again, very
a huge
popular.
Hit.
Yeah, and they started releasing expansion packs for their games, and those expansion packs were also very popular. And that's one of those things where, you know, Blizzard was one of the kind of pioneering companies to show that expansion packs could really help you extend the lifespan of a title and to really enhance the player experience for those titles. It was like a win-win for everybody. The players loved it because there was this game that they were truly emotionally invested in that they got to play more of, and the, you know, of course, Blizzard liked it because it meant more revenue coming in, and they didn't, without having to develop an entirely new game. You develop an expansion pack that's built on the foundation of the game that it's expanding.
Mm-hmm.
But in I'm sorry, go ahead.
I was going to note that according to Blizzard, Diablo 2 set a record at that time for the fastest selling PC game ever. And then in 2001, when Diablo 2 Lord of Destruction, the expansion pack, was released, it sold more than 1 million copies in its first month.
That's pretty impressive. Yeah. And 2001 was also when Blizzard went to the European Computer Trade Show and announced the development for a game that would take – that kind of dwarfed the success of all the other games combined, ultimately, called World of Warcraft. And this actually shocked people that Blizzard was going to get into the massively multiplayer online role-playing game because – at that point, really, there had only been two big MMORPGs in North America at that point. There was Ultima Online, which was kind of the first one. But by this time, Ultima Online's star was in serious decline.
Yeah.
And there was EverQuest.
Yes, and which was a Sony property.
Yeah, and EverQuest was still going on strong, and people were a little skeptical that Blizzard could create a game that could compete against EverQuest. Now, granted, this is 2001 when they announced it. It wouldn't be till 2004 when the game actually launches. So between 2001 and 2004, there's massive development being put behind World of Warcraft. Also, in 2002, there was another story about a failed attempt to bring another Blizzard game to market. In this case, it was a console game.
Yeah, they were the reemergence of the console attempt, but also you can tell by this point that Blizzard gets the idea that their franchises, by expanding on their franchises, they can continue the success of these games and build the universe a little bit more each time with each iteration.
Yeah.
I believe you're talking about StarCraft Ghost.
Yeah, StarCraft Ghost. This was supposed to be a first-person.
I'm just looking forward to that.
Yeah, it was supposed to be a first-person shooter game, stealth game, so kind of like games. Other stealth games we can think of, like except it's skipped out of my head. Let me try this again.
Okay. Well, StarCraft Ghost was a game based on a unit from the StarCraft series. The Ghost is a Terran unit that has the ability to use stealth technology to hide. And I think the idea would be that you would be able to become one of these ghosts and sneak up on your enemies and become essentially a sniper or a sapper and get behind enemy lines and do that, which is, you know, spy games are always kind of fun because you have that element of I've got to be sneaky. I've got to, you know, hide out and sneak up on the enemy. And anyway.
Splinter Cell.
Splinter Cell.
Yeah. So anyway... This is what I get for having 4 hours of sleep. Kids, get your sleep. So they first partnered with Nihilistic. Nihilistic was a company that had created a game called Vampire the Masquerade based off the role-playing game of the same name, done by White Wolf Studios, if I'm not mistaken, located out of Stone Mountain, Georgia.
I think so, yes.
Yeah, nice guys over at White Wolf. I've met several of them. So they had created this game for called Vampire the Masquerade, and Nihilistic and Blizzard together were going to try and bring StarCraft Ghost to market. But there were delays in the development process, and eventually, because Nihilistic had other contract obligations, the partnership had to dissolve. So then Blizzard partnered with a different company called Swingin' Ape.
Yeah, they actually acquired Swingin' Ape on May 16th, 2005. And that was the point, was that they were going to become the console team and continue working on StarCraft Ghost.
Yeah, now the abandonment process was a long and painful one. First, Blizzard abandoned the plans to create a GameCube version of StarCraft Ghost. Then they abandoned the PS2 and Xbox plans because at that point, the next generation consoles were starting to come out. So now if they were going to develop it, they were going to have to develop it for the next generation ones. And it kind of – those have kind of become – that game has become vaporware essentially.
Yeah, it hasn't been as far as I know, officially discontinued, but it's on an indefinite hiatus.
Yeah. So 2004 is when World of Warcraft officially launches, and it launches late in 2004. But by January 2005, it had sold over 600,000 units. So for an MMORPG to sell that, that's pretty significant because you've got to remember, a classic computer game, you plunk down your money, you've bought your game, you take it home, and you play it until you're either tired of it or you complete it, or maybe you never stop playing it. Maybe you just love it that much. But an MMORPG is a continuing investment.
Yes.
Because you buy the game and then you have to subscribe to the service to allow you to continue to play. So for it to make that many sales is pretty impressive. You know, that Blizzard had really made a name for itself, and people trusted that name and a lot of people bought it. And then again, it used that sort of cartoonish style, not cartoonish so much that it was like off-putting, but just a little bit of the cartoonish style that Blizzard had kind of developed over its years as a game developer that really, I think, appealed to a wide audience.
I think that, well, of course, Blizzard sort of has a signature style of art that they use. And I think that, again, Blizzard has enough of a sense of humor that the units can be have a cartoonish element, and it kind of softens the gore of all the slaying that goes on in the game.
Yeah.
Because it's, you know, a little quirky and a little softer and friendlier looking.
Now, after the development was over for World of Warcraft, but before it had actually debuted, one of the three founders, Alan Adam, actually, the guy who was the linchpin for the original...
the glue.
Yeah, the glue that held the original team together, left Blizzard.
Although he was still a consultant.
Yeah, and he's still... I mean, if you watch the video, like I said, that I was talking about on Blizzard's site, he's featured very heavily in it, and he has nothing but good things to say about the company. So it's not like there was any... bad feelings or anything. It may have just been that was...
It was time to go?
It was time to go. Time to do something else. Like that he had set out to create a successful video game company. He had done that, and now it was time to move on to the next thing. So the other two founders are still there at Blizzard. They still are working there. And in 2005, Blizzard threw the very first BlizzCon, which is a game festival, a gaming festival that focuses on Blizzard titles. And so they'll have things like they'll have tournaments, and they have they'll allow people to play demos of various games that haven't come out yet, and they'll have costume contests. And a lot of the people that a lot of my professional peers love to go to BlizzCon. I have never been. Frankly, I've played several Blizzard titles, but I've never gotten into World of Warcraft. So I'm not as heavily tied to the company as some of my friends are.
Yeah.
But folks like Tom Merritt and Veronica Belmont, Scott Johnson, like all these other podcasters and crazy people love to go there. So I love following Twitter during BlizzCon because it is hysterical and awesome. I mean, you to see that kind of excitement behind game titles is always fun, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so... 2005 was the very first BlizzCon, and they've just gotten larger and more elaborate every year. And then in 2007, keep in mind, over all this time, Blizzard continues to release expansion packs.
Yeah. There was one thing I wanted to mention,
though. Oh, sure, sure.
That in August of 2005, August 1st, in fact, the Redwood City studio closed.
Mm.
Just about everybody got moved to the Irvine, California office, which is where Blizzard's based. But they actually closed Blizzard North Studios, the actual building.
And quite a few people left Blizzard North at that time, too. People who, you know, left on their own to found other companies.
Yep.
But in 2007, Vivendi, if you remember, that was the company that had purchased Sierra Online and thus Blizzard Entertainment, merged its game division with Activision, which then creates a new branch called Activision Blizzard,
mm-hmm.
which is where we stand right now, although you never know by the time this podcast comes out.
True. And, of course, Activision was founded by former Atari people who had worked on titles for the Atari 2600.
Yeah. And so then
they're old hands in the gaming business, too.
That's kind of bringing us up to date. StarCraft II came out in 2010.
Again, massive, massive hit.
Another big expansion pack called Cataclysm came out for World of Warcraft, which dramatically changed the game.
Mm-hmm.
It was supposed to be this essentially a world-altering event within the game world, so that places and activities that had been familiar now suddenly weren't.
Mm-hmm.
It was designed to be that. It was really designed to shake things up so that people who had been playing the game forever would suddenly have new stuff to do. And it wouldn't just be like a new map that they could explore because they had reached, you know, the level cap and now they'd had nothing else to do. And so that was a big deal when that came out. And this year, the game Diablo 3 is in beta. It's one of those betas that people are really, I can think of two games off the top of my head that have had gamers scrabbling at the chance to be in the beta. One of them is Diablo 3. The other is The Old Republic. Mm-hmm. So those would be the two big games I would think of 2011 that people were trying to get into. And Diablo 3, of course, just has this huge history behind it. And people are eager to play a new Diablo game. I mean, it's been years since Diablo 2 came out. So that's something that's going on right now. And something that happened earlier the week that we're recording this podcast that I thought was interesting is that Blizzard auctioned off some of the original server blades from its first server for World of Warcraft.
Mm-hmm.
And they auctioned it off in a charity auction that would benefit St. Jude Children's Research Hospital. So that was kind of cool that, you know, this piece of video game, computer game history went on sale in order to benefit a charity. And also there's, I should add that there is the rumor, it's not so much a rumor, it's just in development limbo, of a Warcraft movie.
Oh, interesting.
World of Warcraft movie. And Sam Raimi is inked to direct this film should it ever actually get into true development. So Sam Raimi, of course, famous for the documentary Evil Dead.
Ah. And of course, the BlizzCon announcements this year included the Defense of the Ancients game called Blizzard Dota, D-O-T-A being Defense of the Ancients. And also a couple expansion packs, StarCraft II, Heart of the Swarm. And there's going to be new units in that, apparently. And World of Warcraft, Mists of Pandaria.
Yeah.
Which features a new monk unit and critters that are pandas. Apparently, if I'm not mistaken, this actually started as a joke.
Yeah.
And they decided to go all out with it and make an expansion. So again, I love that about Blizzard.
I hope when they attack, they yell out "Skadoosh!"
Oh, no, actually, the Pandaren race apparently debuted a long time before Kung Fu Panda did. So.
I maintain my statement.
Okay, all right,
all right.
But Blizzard has really set itself apart not just for the quality of its games, but for its willingness to add a little humor and mix it up in there. Plus, I've always found it kind of nice that they release a Mac version of the game,
yeah.
You know, long before OS X, back when Apple was considered a very
and also ran
an endangered species,
yeah,
of computer. They were, Blizzard was still releasing the Warcraft and StarCraft and Diablo games for the older versions of the Mac OS. And I always, you know, it seems like they're not afraid to take chances with,
yeah,
things, and just to get a few, you know, to give other people an opportunity to play the games. So
yeah,
they're one of my favorites.
It's a pretty remarkable company as video game companies go. And I'm curious to see, you know, how things pan out in the future. And I'm sure that World of Warcraft will continue to be a juggernaut. And I'm really curious to see what their next totally new product will be.
There's a rumor about something called Titan. And
yeah,
I'm not certain whether or not that is
a tie into something else.
Yes. But
yeah,
apparently it is completely new. So.
Well, that's kind of where we are today. And we're going to wrap up this discussion about Blizzard. If you guys have any companies you would like us to highlight, or people within tech, or if you just always wondered how something works and you really wanted us to talk about it, let us know. You can email us. Our address is techstuff@howstuffworks.com, or you can let us know on Facebook or Twitter. Our handle there is techstuff, HSW, and Chris and I will talk to you again really soon.
Okay.
Be sure to check out our new video podcast, Stuff from the Future. Join How Stuff Works staff as we explore the most promising and perplexing possibilities of tomorrow. The How Stuff Works iPhone app has arrived. Download it today on iTunes. Brought to you by the reinvented 2012 Camry. It's ready. Are you?
Are you on the hunt for a new home this spring? but don't know where to start? Fisher Homes is your solution. Your new home should reflect you, from the front door to the kitchen and even your outdoor space. Start your journey by selecting your ideal home site, like in a cul-de-sac or that's tree-lined, and then choose from a variety of expertly designed floor plans. Bring it all together at our Lifestyle Design Center. Let Fisher Homes be your new home solution this spring and start making memories at fisherhomes.com.
Open a limited-time 11-month certificate at Kemba Financial Credit Union. At 5.25% APY, it's more than triple the national average, plus it's a safe and secure way to grow your money. Visit your local branch or kemba.org/cd for details. Offer expires May 31st, 2024. APY equals annual percentage yield. Restrictions apply. $500 minimum and $250,000 maximum deposit. Advantage status required. Comparison based on bank rate average. Federally insured by NCUA.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile. And the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time. There's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, clickgrainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Get emotional with me, Radhi Devlukia, in my new podcast, A Really Good Cry. We're going to be talking with some of my best friends.
I didn't know we were going to go there on this.
People that I admire.
When we say listen to your body, really tune in to what's going on.
Authors of books that have changed my life.
Now you're talking about sympathy, which is different than empathy, right?
Never forget, it's okay to cry as long as you make it a really good one. Listen to A Really Good Cry with Radhi Devlukia on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.